On Sunday, December 20th, in a private home near Davis Square, Somerville, several activists gathered to hear an update on the case of Mamia Abu-Jamal. The main presenter of this meeting-slash-social event was Noelle Hanahan of Prison Radio. Noelle has been recording Mamia's commentaries from death row for well over a decade. She explained when she first met Mamia and how and why she works with him.
I met Mamia first in July of 1992, and I've been working with him pretty consistently since. And throughout the course of the work together, I talk to him probably twice a week now by phone. And I visited him for a period until they no longer made that possible for many years in the middle of that. So I've been working very closely with Mumia for a number of years. And just so you know, Prison Radio is working to get Mumia's voice into like the public debate and dialogue. So we record him twice a week. And we've recorded 100 essays this year, and we've recorded interviews that he's done with M1 Cynthia McKinney, Amy Goodman, and a variety of other people. And we work to record him for video projects and film projects. And we've also worked pretty hard on his book projects, both on the images and also in the content of the research. So we've worked very, very closely with Mumia, and I do that because I think I've got a really powerful voice.
Noelle Hanahan of Prison Radio. I asked her if she or Mumia get any flack from the authorities for what they do and how she has access to make it so.
You know, over the course of a number of years, he's always had a lot of flack for his writing. So they've, like, taken the phone out of the phone jack when he was recording, doing something live for Democracy Now! They sued him and said that he couldn't earn any money from his materials, and he won that. Then they said no one in Pennsylvania could have any journalist visit them with a recording device or a piece of paper or a pencil, and that happened in 1996, and that's still the case. So each individual prison in Pennsylvania might make an exception, but the law in Pennsylvania is that journalists cannot go in to interview inmates. So Mumia has access to the phone, and the way he has access to the phone is that prisoners' families really fought to have access to their loved ones. So it was really the prisoners' families who got more telephone access. And they couldn't isolate Mumia and say that he would have less access than the other death row inmates because they couldn't exceptionalize him. So he has as much as the other inmates, which is 3 15-minute calls a week that are computer-timed.
Noelle Hanahan describing how she's able to record commentaries by Mamia Abu-Jamal. Mamia's commentaries are heard at least weekly on Free Speech Radio News. You can also hear them anytime at the Prison Radio website, www.prisonradio.org. Noelle then went on to give an update of Mamia's legal status.
So I think the short version of where he is right now is he lost before the U.S. Supreme Court in April of this year his first and only federal habeas corpus. In 1996, Clinton signed the Effective Death Penalty Act and Anti-Terrorism Act right after the Oklahoma City bombing. And so that meant that inmates only had one federal habeas corpus appeal. And how I explain that is, like, Reuben Hurricane Carter had 3 federal habeases. Mumia only had 1. He just lost that before the U.S. Supreme Court, which makes it supremely difficult for Mumia to get traction in the courts. Another way of explaining it is, Mumia's been trying to get new evidence in since his original conviction in 1982. He's not been able to get any of that evidence in. So if you've seen things like the Amnesty International report or the HBO documentary or the evidence of innocence that come out or the new Polakoff photos that show that the police crime scene was manufactured, none of that material is in the record that is following Mumia through the courts. They're trying to, in some way, get a new evidentiary hearing, something in there that would allow Mumia to get a new trial. So how that is going to happen is very unclear and very problematic.
When you say they, who's working on his behalf? Is it legal?
Mumia has a legal team that it keeps filing petitions, bringing forward new evidence and or legal procedures that might possibly open up the door. One thing that's also happening right now that's really serious is the U.S. Supreme Court denied Mumia's petition based on his conviction. They upheld his conviction. The Pennsylvania District Attorney's Office also had appealed because the Third Circuit had overturned Mumia's sentence of death. So Mumia's sentence was overturned, but the district attorney in Philadelphia appealed it. In March, the U.S. Supreme Court held a conference on that appeal, and they have not yet ruled. So the U.S. Supreme Court could reimpose Mumia's death sentence. They've just taken a break, and they'll reconvene on January 11th. So it's still out there that the U.S. Supreme Court could reimpose his death sentence. If they don't reimpose his death sentence, the district attorney in Philadelphia has to take Mumia, in order to impose death, they have to take Mumia to a public trial on the sentence. The only option for a jury in that trial will be life or death because his conviction remains. The way I say it is, I don't know that Mumia is innocent or guilty, but I know that he didn't have a fair trial and that an enormous amount of the evidence that is involved in the case was suppressed and altered by the prosecution.
Right.
I know him very well. I know a lot of the players. I may have some instincts that he's innocent, but certainly he didn't receive justice. And so there are these acts of prosecutorial misconduct and police misconduct that are so severe that cry out for a new trial and or just the man walking out. Like, for instance, they manufactured confessions. They said that Mumia confessed, but they didn't. Those confessions that the police said happened didn't appear for 2 months until after Mumia was in jail. And they only appeared when the DA brought all the police officers into a room and said, Mumia had filed a police brutality complaint, and all the police officers gathered to respond to the fact that Mumia was beaten at the scene. And he said, how many of you heard a confession? And they all raised their hands. And that's the only, that's the first time that a confession was documented by the police officers, and they contradicted their original statements that night. So that's one thing.
Plus the doctor.
Yeah, the doctor said he made no statements. The attending police officer said the Negro male made no statements. So they went back on that. There were no direct ballistic evidence tying Mumia's gun, which he had on him, to the shooting. There are police photos. Recently, last 2 years ago, a whole set of photos came out of the crime scene that were taken before the police photographer got there, so within minutes of the shooting. A photographer for the Philadelphia Bulletin arrived, Polakoff is his last name. He offered the DA the photos, that they never wanted them. They were discovered a couple years ago. They show a crime scene that's totally different from the police photographer crime scene. There was just a lot of evidence that they suppressed.
Noelle Hanahan of Prison Radio talking of the status of Mumia Abu-Jamal's legal case and why she has been involved with the issue. Part of the reason for this gathering was to raise funds. Prison Radio does need donations to continue their vital work, but that was not the main focus. Noelle sincerely wanted to give an update and encourage support for Mumia Abu-Jamal. She talked of other ways to help aside from financial donations.
So what I'd like to say is I think anything that people do can be of value, and I can't really assess what is going to be the thing that really makes a difference. But when people have an idea that they, in their own hearts, find really important, whether it's art, whether it's legislation, whether it's lobbying, whatever that is, if people are interested in it, I think it carries a lot of weight. I'll tell what some people are doing. Like for me, I feel like I'm amplifying Mumia's voice. Like I'm getting his voice more into the public debate. I try and take the images that he has and make them more accessible, the images of different photographers taking photos of him over the years. That's the one thing I think that I can do to sort of catalyze some energy. There are other people who are working on Holder. So they're trying to get a Justice Department investigation, which I think is a really good idea. And they're trying to work some lobbying with different congressional forces and senatorial forces that may be able to move that. There are other people working on specific evidence of innocence. You know, like there's people who are trying to do investigative work. So there's different work that's happening in different arenas. So even any kind of consciousness raising that people can do in any manner, I think, might push some button that works. Like you just never know what's really going to make a difference. Any motion is like a pebble in a pond. It has a lot of ripples.
One of the hosts of this event in Somerville is Victor Wallace. I asked him why he opened his house and organized this event.
I've been involved in working on this case now for about 15 years and gotten to know Noel in the process. I've read quite a bit about it. I edit this journal, Socialism and Democracy, for which we've been able to obtain two articles that Mumia wrote. So that's a kind of a little connection. More basically, I think that people forget the motivation behind the authorities in Pennsylvania, their desperate desire to put Mumia out of existence, because he was a radical crusading journalist. That's the bottom line of the whole thing. They really wanted to get him because he was exposing what the Philadelphia Police Department was all about in the late 1970s, and they couldn't forgive him for that. So the first opportunity they had to get him, there was every reason for them to do it. I especially hope that people will read the recent book that came out last year, 2008, called The Framing of Mumia Abu-Jamal. That's the title of the book. The author's name, I believe, was Patrick O'Connor. It's an excellent book which will explain what the case is all about. And O'Connor himself is a crime journalist. I mean, that's his profession. He's not a radical activist or anything of the sort. He just looks into the facts of the case, but he shows in the background the importance of this political motivation for the police in pursuing Mumia from the beginning.
One of the attendees was author, activist, and former prisoner Kaze Tore. He told of his time in prison and how he would organize fellow prisoners to fight for rights and dignities. Prison officials responded to this by moving him to another prison, but he'd just do the same thing there.
That backfired on him. You know, that's what I was talking about. It's two kinds of ways you can look at what they do to you. When they put you in isolation, when they come down hard on you, they'll either break you or they'll make you stronger and more disciplined, you know, because you know you don't have the time to waste. That's one thing Malcolm talked about, time and respect of time.
This was a private event by invite only, but a lot of good information about Mumia Abu-Jamal was disseminated.
So if you go to the Prison Radio website, or if you get to hear more of the commentaries, he's done like 100 this year, and he's incredibly well-read, and he has the focus to, in about 2 to 3 minutes, really hit the nail on the head. Like, he's a very gifted political columnist.
Noel Hanahan. The website is www.prisonradio.org. For the Boston Community Reporters Project and What's Left, I am Chuck Rosina.